Coming up on American Parlor Songbook, join us for an episode from the studio. We're propping up the cardboard walls for a show about B-movies. Sketches, stories, and songs on no-name, no-budget, cult classics and drive-in features. JP sings about Isaac Asimov's Robot Laws and tells a story about a vintage 80s cinema. Cryptozoologist Emil Konk returns with another lecture, and songwriter Schmedley from The Secret Powers stops by for a solo piano perform lament.
Cut! Print it! It's perfect!
But I said perform lament.
We only get one take.
Why?
Well, there's no budget.
Can I just do a quick take?
Julie, just be happy with your perform lament and move on.
All right, fine. But is this silver spandex suit really necessary?
Of course it is. I look great in it. Roll the feature.
From the balcony of a Times Square cinema in 1983, this is American Parlor Songbook with your host at the piano, J.P. Houston.
And as always on the other microphone, stitched together from the best body parts I could dig up, Julie Van Dusen. B-movie. Cult classic. Drive-in feature. Art house film. Tin can reels stacked up in a dusty booth upstairs behind the balcony. In the last old Times Square cinema. Dead risen brain suckers. Hot rod she-demons. Nanny's gone wild. Creatures from beneath, above, or beyond, karate champions, prison girls in trouble. So bad, it's good. Perfectly bad. Better than bad, it's better than good. It's good, bad. It's not bad, good. It's good, bad. Roll the first reel and start the show.
Pull the string, the saucer swing, the frame scratch, rockets peel. Seed, fill the screen and make it real, too real, too real, too real, too real, too real.
Beware, beware, take care. That teenager is really a space octopus. That woman is about to be 50 feet tall. Yes, that frisbee on a string is going to be a flying saucer. You'll run screaming from the theater. Not too quick, though. The cardboard laboratory walls will shake. Before they knew the so bad it's good rule, well, it just came naturally. And then you add a little time, you date it a bit, and, well, it gets even better. There's nothing quite like a passé genre in the rearview mirror, right? 1970s New York City street grid, or 50s propaganda schlock, or 80s karate fest, or 60s hippie freakout, or go-go girls. Shake it on the strip, you know, hot rods and tans, and don't stop, baby, go. Pop the top on the tilt-a-whirl swirl. Never stop with the blonde top bomb. Crazy, baby, go, baby, go, baby, go.
Pull the string, the saucer swing, the frame scratch, rockets peel. Mark the seed, fill the screen, and make it real, too real, too real, too real, too real, too real.
Cha-cha-cha. Cha-cha-cha.
I think Jason Voorhees may have had asthma. Say what you will about him, but he was one hell of a goalie. The soulless stalker. They don't seem to like fun much, and, well, they never seem to run. There's a law of B-movie physics. A co-ed in motion will always trip. Or an idle car will not start in an emergency. We love to be scared, don't we? And you know, the lower the production budget, I think the scarier it gets. Something about the bad acting and the warbly sound. It just made it all seem more dangerous, more underground. I always wonder where they are now, the actors. They always get killed off one by one, and it usually killed their career. You know, it'd probably be a pretty tough life to be an aging scream queen or a Russ Meyer girl. The great Russ Meyer, you know, the naughty genius of the American repressed subconscious. Without fail, in the first 10 minutes of any given Meyer picture, someone suggestively pumps gas. There's nothing more American than diesel, desert, violence, and salaciousness. Or all the way across the country, there was his weird filmic second cousin, John Waters. Pencil-thin mustache, army of cross-dressers, chickens, creepers, and beehive hairdos, Baltimore's Prince of Perv, run and gunned on 16mm over the weekend, just like it should be, you know, bad and good, stolen frames, anarchy in the streets with big fat divine filling the frame. Maybe we can make a movie. All we need is a magazine of 16 with sound and the strangest friends around. So lower your standards, suspend your disbelief, and watch as the disaster unfolds in glorious 16mm flicker. Our friend Schmedley is going to stop by and sing us some songs, and Emil Konk returns with another one of his great lectures. Stick around, it's going to be good, bad, bad, good, good, bad, it's going to be bad, good.
Pull the string, the saucer swing. The frame scratch, rockets peel. Mark the seed, fill the screen, and make it real, too real, too real, too real, too real, too real.
Since 1958, the magazine Famous Monsters of Filmland has delivered the scoop on creature features from Frankenstein to Freddy. Now, here to terrify you with nothing but his face and bad melodies, J.P. Houston sings the news.
Well, just as B-movies predicted, the robots are rising. Giant leaps in recent years have led to smarter and more agile mechanical friends. So, as we teeter on the edge of artificial intelligence now, some important issues are being raised. Like recently when the Dallas police, they brought a standoff to an end by sending in a robot to take out the criminal. Sure, they got the bad guy, but did they take a scary step at the same time? Sci-fi writer and thinker Isaac Asimov, he had an idea about this last century, right? He said that, well, maybe we should start thinking about programming our robots so they can't harm humans. Seems like a reasonable idea, you know? Put it as a fundamental law deep in the code of all mechanical things. Get a jump on that Terminator scenario. Here's a song I wrote about that.
Tomorrow looms in our future ruins, maiden slips of our hubris, ridden ego trips and tricks of man-made minds, setting time landmines where we'll step when tomorrow chimes. Now the drones go fly, dropping apple pie for the kids in the streets of the bullet-riddled skids. And it's a short, sharp slope down the hangman's rope if the rules should remain unwrote. So say so, better set them straight, don't let another one slip by. I say no, all we never know, don't ever let them harm a fly. If a steel heart ticks, set the base ethics in the stone of the code, in the setting silicone, and don't go bend the rules or your hell-bent tools gonna shock all your fleshy fools. So say so, better set them straight so not another one slips by. I say no, all we never know, don't ever let them hurt a fly.
Number one, a robot may not injure a human being or, through inaction, allow a human being to come to harm. You gonna argue with that? I don't think so. Number two, a robot must obey the orders given to it by human beings, except where such orders would conflict with the first law. I like where this is headed. Now, number three, a robot must protect its own existence as long as such protection does not conflict with the first or second law.
So say so, better set them straight so not another one slips by. I say no, all we never know, don't ever let them harm a fly.
Or me. Now, we're going to be hearing some songs this week from songwriter and producer Schmedley.
Schmidt has worked with bands like Ween and Weezer. He was a member of the Holliston Stops and now his current group, The Secret Powers. Here with a special solo piano performance on American Parlor Songbook, Schmedley. American Parlor Songbook is now available on PRX, and we're excited to be adding some new stations this season. Well, we're always looking for more ways to subvert the airwaves, so information is available on our website about how to suggest or request a local broadcast. We're also recording live episodes all year, bringing the program and our guests to venues all across Southern California. Our schedule is available online at our website, AmericanParlorSongbook.com.
Coming, summer 1985.
Its name is MacGuffin.
What is it?
It's not an it, it's a what.
What? In the distant future, out of the past, comes a mysterious mystery. It is called MacGuffin.
I found it in the woods. It's my best friend.
Well, keep it in the basement. Don't let Mom see.
In the year 2012, a boy and his teen robot companion,
Radical,
will set out on an adventure.
I didn't think they let kids from Sector B out this far in the wasteland.
Oh yeah? Could a kid from Sector B do this?
Where breakdancing is a lethal weapon.
I don't do the robot. I am the robot.
And roller skating is the only mode of transportation.
Don't just skate there. Kiss me.
A young crew of young misfits will fight to save the planet from a communist duck.
I'm not gonna make it. You gotta skate on without me, kid.
I can't do it alone.
We've gotta find the crystal cave.
A wise man on the edge of civilization will show them the way.
You got to listen to me, little kid. See, you got to hear what this wise man in the robe is saying to you with the super face. Take the crystal and do the thing with the cave and the MacGuffin before my $50,000 cameo is over. It's over, Zerbin.
Get your hands off of her, duck.
Don't fall for it, Johnny. I'll be fine. I'll see you in the forever, ever, never, ever.
Shinola, no!
The power, the majesty, the merchandising. MacGuffin.
Before a constant stream of everything poured directly into your hand for free, when music was never once made without a vibration at its heart, when televisions were square, strange little movies had a home on a big screen in a dive cinema in flickering 16mm. Sleep was never in the cards for me. There wasn't any time for it, not when the local hippie-owned TV station would go blue after midnight. Russ Meyer, Roger Corman, John Waters, they owned the late-night Toronto airwaves. I'd sneak in an earpiece and gingerly dial up to 57 on the UHF, crystal clear and in fuzzy black and white on a gargantuan, air quotes, portable TV. I'd smuggled it in from the garage and buried it in a pile of toys beside my bed. So with no one the wiser, I could duck under the covers and watch go-go girls fight zombies until the test-pattern beep put me to sleep at 4 a.m. Toronto the good. Clean Chicago. Polite New York. Buttoned up, tucked in, and safe. But for a few blocks on the Sin Strip. Young between Queen and Bloor. Bongwater head shops, parlors where massage was the least of what happened. The Gasworks Rock Bar, House of Lords, the salon for mohawks and pink dye jobs. And grindhouse cinemas. Walls of naughty posters, Avengers from the Sludge, New York Warriors, and Swedish butlers. $2 for all-day features and tin can trailers with melted frames. I'd shave 50 cents off of lunch every day. Move down the line, square pizza, check, Jell-O cup sold. Up to the lady with the cataract glasses and the thick Scottish accent. Hand her your brown Canadian $2 bill. Now, if you foregoed the chocolate milk for a week, well, you'd have enough for a Friday after-school show. You see, parents in those days, well, they basically just turned you loose. As long as you made it home before the streetlights came on, well, you were free to get kidnapped in an ice cream truck or skateboard off the bluffs. So I'd spill out of class on Friday and, well, I'd make for a downtown streetcar to a Spielberg movie. Up onto the old red and yellow rattle rocket, you know, one of those streetcars there with the steel wheels and the silver tar-sunk tracks. Rocket out of the East End and down to the brown building jungle. Ring the bell and step on the hydraulic step, hiss, and the steam-powered doors open, and then a kid loose in the streets, walked down through the heart of the Sin Strip to the Imperial Six Cinema. Two big city blocks of oohs and ahs and overloaded white bread eyes. Up above the door of the Zanzibar there, girls, and a foggy black and white TV. It would crackle on to a security camera view of the stage, and then a Trixie or a Crystal would strut out, and I'd freeze in my tracks. Hypnotized by the possibilities. She'd reach down to lift her top, and then, just at the last second, click. The screen would go blank. The definition of childhood insanity, watching the same thing over and over and expecting a different result. So I'd finally give up after about the third loop and head on to see Raiders for the eighth time. Now, the sheen of the 80s was only a millimeter deep. Those Spielberg track houses, well, they really were built on haunted ground, out on the edge of town, you know, just a few blocks from the gritty and the garbage dumps and the shadows. All the satin jacket smiles and heartfelt earnestness, well, couldn't contain the underbelly swell. And it burst out onto VHS and into the sticky floor B houses, where you'd sneak in or brown paper bag the tape home to watch in secret. There I was, on Yonge Street, looking up through the neo-futuristic entrance into the Imperial Six, the big circle hole in the facade, through to the showtimes on an inverted marquee in the outdoor lobby there. Rocky IV at 2, 4, 7, and 9, Tootsie in Theater 3, Gandhi for the boring adults, and Raiders for me. Hot, real buttered popcorn and actual sugarcane Coke in a waxy cup that played straw squeak percussion when you pulled it in and out for a sip. Wall-to-wall red carpet and a grand 1920s ceiling made tacky with a 70s paint job. The tick of the projector and the strip against the hot bulb and into the dark and away to wherever it took me. But, you know, after the sixth or seventh time on that same trip, you always knew what was coming. And after enough of the same thing over and over, just with a different name, your Goonies blur with your Stand By Me's, and your Alan Quartermain's echo your Indiana's, and your Gremlins may as well be Johnny Five's. The illusions were sweet, but, well, the taste went dull. The thrill wore off, and I dragged my feet out onto Young Street with those dark room eyes. And then the sun pried my pupils wide open, overexposed the city scene, stumbling through the walkers, on the edge of the traffic, on the sidewalk, over the blowing subway grates, and back across, you know, feeling my way along the shop windows, head shop here, and until it all came into focus. Foggy yellow bulbs framing a modern art masterpiece. Feature number one, airbrushed over cartoon posters, muscled oaf with a mop in his hand, and pan up to the face. A beautiful something different, a deformed mess. One drooping eye looking down on me. The Toxic Avenger at the Rio Cinema. Oh, there's a 6 o'clock show. If I can cut out by 7:30, hop the red rocket down Queen Street, I can sneak in the back door by 8 and no mom will be the wiser. Now, what to do about that R there on the poster? What about a quick fake mustache for a dwarf routine? So that only works in cartoons, right? But it's probably all just attitude anyway. It's all just attitude anyway. Now, if I act like I'm supposed to be there, they'll totally believe this little kid is an adult, right? One, please. One, please. I slam the brown Canadian $2 bill down with authority, right? And well, that bad teenage mustache ticket taker, he couldn't care less. He barely looked up from his Mad Magazine to snicker. He just ripped a generic ticket right off the roll there and waved me on through. The finger-waving marms, they stomped through the 80s just crying out, "Think of the children!" But, well, it was really more, "Think for you about your children." Yeah, those biddies, they ruined scores of teenage boys' after-school lives by getting the naughty magazines moved to below the counter. No longer could you pretend to play Galaga while sneaking illegal bunny peeks. And so those boys entered the 90s with a dangerous ignorance about anatomy and, well, it clearly explains the drop in the birth rate. Nothing was safe. Not just those magazines, but warning labels for lyrics with attitude and all-out bans for movies that dared to scare. Those Carry Nation carry-ons, they chopped and buried movies like the slashers therein. And the truth is, well, they were scarier. I cement shoe-walked down the aisle of the Real Theater there like Frankenstein's monster, you know, ripping my shoe soles off with every step on the never-mopped black floor. Side glances from the creepy trench coat creepers. I looked for the furthest spot I could find from anybody. Checked the seat twice, and then I creaked down. The lights dimmed, and a blackout, and the projector whirs up, but Well, it's still black. A pregnant pause and my imagination running away on me. The hairs on the back of my neck stand up and that creeping nothing from behind. And then click. The Grindhouse trailer is a work of art in its own right. Even a chintzy logo, it warbles just right. That narrator sounds like he's gargling rocks in the melted frames and the hype word overlays and the suggestion that there's going to be nudity, right? I think there was clearly something wrong with the water pipes in the 70s and 80s. They seemed to produce too much steam, just steam everywhere. And then the title card comes up and it bleeds or chatters. And then they reuse a scream sound effect and then black. The black of what could be. You see, it's a question. It's always a question, right? Because a question is bait, and the trailer is the hook. Well, in Grindhouse, the hook is often literally a hook. I spent the next 90 minutes catching flies in my slack-jawed, awestruck mouth, laughing at the bad lines, cringing at the latex gore, shamefully peeking through my fingers at the co-eds, cheering for the good bad guys. This was no clean-cut banana seat bicycle, you know, coming-of-age Spielberg snoozer. No, this was wrong. This was right. This was beautiful, ugly, low-budget truth. Fear lurked just beneath the surface of the collective unconscious. The greater, more horrible danger was buried in the Kansas fields and up there in the Siberian snow. Silos with megaton nuclear missiles inside. The day after was always just a day away. And then in the bedrooms, a mysterious disease that single-handedly ended the sexual revolution. Well, that constant hum of fear led to denial. You know, just to get by, denial, right? Make the glitter bright enough, make the car sleek enough, make the music synthetic enough, and well, you don't really have to feel. And if you didn't feel it, well, the fear wouldn't haunt you so. And then, those shallow waters there, you know, compressed down, shallower, thinner and thinner, well, they didn't leave enough room for escape. So a darker mirror image was born, in black. I sat stunned in the stale popcorn air. As those credits rolled, I tried to shake it off, you know, stand up and make for the regular 1980s out there on Yonge Street. As I walk up the aisle, well, the next feature flickers up. I turn my head, just for a little half look. Uh-oh. My Bloody Valentine. Oh, no. Just keep moving. You don't even want to know, right? Oh, I kind of want to know. Fine, I'll sit down. I'll just watch this one. Then I'll sneak in later. I'll say I was down at the Alexander's place. It'll be fine. And then, well, before I knew it, I was halfway through Warriors, the third feature, and it was past 9 p.m. I was going to have to come up with something very good. I scrambled out onto the street there. 10 years too young and 5 hours too late. Just keep your head down, kid. Act like you know where you're going. My mind racing on the streetcar ride home along Queen Street there, you know, past the real world grit. Well, you know, I guess as gritty as Canada really gets. Maple syrup bandits and hockey hooligans. Planning my excuse. Homework. Homework is always good, right? Because, well, you can't get in trouble for doing homework with your friends, right? Wait, which friend? Noah. Noah will have my back. Sure, Mrs. Houston, he was here all night. Perfect. And in through the back door, casually through the kitchen, here it comes. Mom's at the dishes. Brush your teeth and put on your pajamas. And Mom, and nothing. She didn't even notice. In a grand finale of latchkey kid neglect, she had no idea I'd been gone all night. Upstairs, I lay awake, alternately giddy and terrified, visions of slashers and graffiti kings and deformed heroes. No, it wasn't like those ABC after-school specials. No, there were no consequences. There was no spiral into crime, no reform school, no teen pregnancies. No, it was just good old-fashioned, taboo, macabre fun. Fun that would fade away. You see, movies got bigger, and the smaller ones just kind of disappeared. There weren't any drive-ins left to project them on, and no more $2 two-bit B houses. Well, now everybody's got a camera and a computer, and well, you can't tell a vanity project from a genuine good-time failure anymore. It's just digital drives for ironic attempts against the postmodern backdrop. Ever since that last Sinstrip Cinema closed its 90s doors, and the ponytail projectionist carefully stacked up the dusty cans for the last time. And then up there in that booth, the reel sputtered out, and the last frame flickered past the hot bulb and off into forever.
Flicker reels in 16, fade to black on a tattered up screen. In the dark, playing catch with the moon, shooting jacks with the stars when the world was ours.
APS is on Twitter at Parlor Songbook. And you can find information about the program on our website, AmericanParlorSongbook.com. Now, we love hearing from our listeners, and there's a contact link there on the page. Sometimes I'll even answer your letters in a song on the air. So if you need advice, or it's your grandmother's 100th birthday, or you just plain want to tell us how much you hate the program, just write J.P. Houston Sings in the subject line, and you never know, you just might get a response on the air.
Now, as part of the American Parlor Lecture Series, noted cryptozoologist and monster hunter, Emil Konk.
Hey, today I'm excited. We get to talk about one of my favorite breeds of abomination, bee monsters. Yeah, that's right. It's time to ditch the pop culture and get down to the business of those giant, infernal, buzzing beasties. We're talking stingers the size of broomsticks, honeycomb entrapment, hive mind attack modes, and what? Bee movie monsters. Really? I just wrote a whole dissertation on hideous life cycle of... No. Never mind. Apparently, I was slightly misinformed about the parameters of today's lecture. We are not going to be discussing bee monsters, much to my palpable disappointment. No, it's creature feature time, folks. That's okay, I get it. As Monster Slayer, I often asked about related movies. When your vocation is portrayed in media, people always want you to fact-check. If you're a doctor, I bet you get all kind of questions about House MD. That Hugh Laurie is one fine actor, huh? Or maybe if you computer hacker, somebody asks you about NCIS episode, and you just stare at them for a really long, uncomfortable time. Well, I get questions like, hey, Konk, did the Octoman really look like guy in rubber suit flailing his tentacles around like maniac? Well, actually, yeah, he totally did. This was one time they got him right. But that's only because future FX genius Rick Baker convinced the real Octoman to let him make life-cast mold of his mutant body. Legend has it, Rick paid him off with 3 pounds of imitation crab meat and a can of spray cheese. But that was unusual situation. No, as shocking as it might seem, the great majority of movie monsters are not, shall we say, well-researched. When you hire screenwriters to pound out script based on pre-sold movie posters, realism is not high on priority list. Number one goal for low-budget producer? Get most for the least. The great Roger Corman was pretty famous for this type of thing. He'd wrap some film he was shooting in nice location week early, just so he can make a whole other movie with same set, cast, crew in 5 days. Creature from Haunted Sea was one such Corman quickie. It stars a young Robert Towne, the Oscar-winning writer of Chinatown, remember him? Who unfortunately was not asked to write this movie. Instead, he was given the regrettable task of introducing characters like Pete Peterson Jr. in this wonderful bit of narration.
Pete Peterson Jr., son of Pete Peterson Sr., famed vaudeville bird mimic. Pete Jr. inherited his father's talent for animal imitations, but unfortunately blew his brain out of whack while imitating a whooping crane at the Elks Convention picnic in Oshkosh in 1942. Since then, he has been Renzo's faithful servant. In return, Renzo permits him to imitate any animal that comes into his head. That, for instance, was the mating call of the Himalayan yak.
Putting bird mimic Pete Peterson and his stock sound effects aside, the story is a simple one. Guy uses legend of sea monster to dispose of people he does not like, only to find out that the monster is in fact real and not too happy to be playing the patsy. When the monster appears, however, it's not some cool-looking gillspawn creature from Black Lagoon. Nah. We've got a goofy mess of Brillo pads, tennis ball eyes, and protruding teeth. Honestly, it looks like meth-addicted inbred cousin of famous cookie-eating puppet. Thankfully, there was no real creature from Haunted Sea to embarrass, but that did not stop a group of expat Caribbean water demons from launching defamation suit. Judge threw it out, but demon protests got ugly. I was called in when they started throwing rotten fish at tourist boats and drowning anyone who did animal impression. You can't really blame them for that one. I'm not overly sympathetic to monsters, but it can be hard for them to get fair deal in Hollywood. Happens all the time. Some low-budget director thinks he'll cut costs by hiring real vampires to act in movie. Then he's surprised when no one shows up for 7 a.m. call time. Hey, buddy, the undead are like Garfield. They don't do mornings, and they're pure evil. A few thespian-minded monstrosities have tried to form unions over the years, but it always ends with someone getting disemboweled, you know, real PR nightmare stuff. Eventually, studio just don't take risk anymore. You try getting liability insurance on a werewolf picture after your star rips out Teamster's lung. So, we mostly left with make-believe monsters in movies that don't know what the heck they're talking about. Blood beasts who can't even drain victim by osmosis. Brain monsters who have ridiculously proportioned cortexes. And mole men who are totally absurd because everyone knows the female mole people are the only ones who can walk upright. Now, sometimes movies invent fiends that don't actually exist, but is so cool that it inspires other monsters. John Carpenter, remake of The Thing from Another World comes to mind. Yeah, a great movie, okay? But it become like Scarface to shapeshifters. Suddenly all these form-flexible critters like the Headley Cow think they're gonna take over the world. Well, little buggers went from being merely annoying to full-on murderous rampage. At least, thanks to movie location, a bunch of them moved down to Antarctica. If you're ever there, don't trust the big penguins. But honestly, it doesn't have to be big-budget monster. Even cheeseball drive-in fare like 1960s Attack of the Eye Creatures has caused me major headache. And not just because of dialogue like this.
You and me are gonna put on an exhibition with the first and only truly authentic spaceship.
You woke me up to tell me that?
Told you it was big, didn't I? Well, I've seen one. Just like all these jokers have been saying. It's big and round and glows sort of funny-like and gives off this funny sound like rrr, rrr, like that.
Really? Rrr, you, my friend, are no Pete Peterson. Eye Creatures is one of those movies where you hope the plucky teenagers lose. Especially since the title dudes are pretty funny-looking blobs with shiny tumor-covered bodies. So what is problem? Well, late in picture, a bunch of these baddies can be seen only wearing the tops of their costumes. Like just the blob head and a black sweater and pants. Apparently, movie didn't have budget for more than one suit, so they just dress in black from neck down and hope no one notice. Well, unfortunately, the bog beasts of Nantucket did notice, and a fashion craze took off. It may seem funny to you imagining a bog beast stuffing its glowing cranberry girth into a Steve Jobs-style turtleneck, but it also made them darn near impossible to see at night. They ambushed and ate half my team and would have likely killed us all. But the beasts made one fatal mistake. They chose cotton over polyblend. Counting on their lack of wash and wear knowledge, I managed to lure the shadowy brutes into a superheated bog pool, then sat back and watched as their GQ attire began to shrink tighter and tighter, squeezing them to a grisly popping end. You had to be there. Today, thanks to 1970s shark picture and a space western, stories we used to label as B-movie are now $100 million high-concept blockbusters. It hasn't made general public any smarter or safer when it comes to monsters, but it has given the creatures a huge ego boost. Some troll gets mentioned in trilogy, suddenly he got Facebook fan page and Twitter groupies. I don't mind. Monster narcissism make life super easy for my line of work. Go ahead, buddy. Geotag the heck out of that selfie. I'll be there tonight, crossbow at the ready. And you, you'll be wishing you'd stayed in the B pictures.
And that was Rob Mills as Emile Conk in a piece written by Kit Passhold. Now, if you want to find some recordings by our musical guest this week, they're available on iTunes as The Secret Powers. Let's have another song from Schmedley. That's our show. Thanks for listening to American Parlor Songbook. Now, APS is produced by the American Parlor Company, presented by KVCR, and available on PRX. You can find information about the program
Wendell.
By visiting our website, Wendell. American Parlor.
Wait, Wendell!
Alert the president. The creature has risen.
Attack of the 50-foot bombshell.
Revenge of the sea hag.
Oh, can it, you fruit. And tell me why I taste syrup.
Behold, the human pancake.
Drop the suspense, Hitchcock. Skip to the last reel.
I'm afraid that this terrifying tale requires a longer setup.
All right, just give me the cliff notes.
I'm not surprised you don't recall, Martha. You were three sheets to the wind.
Maybe two.
Alcohol and dementia do not mix.
What dementia?
You dementia.
Oh, I am as sharp as a tick.
Oh, you're demented.
Oh, that is nonsense. I'm perfectly mented.
That's not a word.
Of course it is. Look, right here. Mented, lucid, of sound mind.
That's not a dictionary, Martha.
I know a dictionary when I see one.
Oh, it's a People magazine, and it's upside down.
You're upside down.
Oh, good comeback.
Well, you're a comeback.
Diminishing returns.
Minishing.
That's not a word.
Of course it is.
Oh, stop me if you've heard this before.
Oh, all right, fine. So, there I was. Perfectly mentional, in the limo on my way to the awards when...
When you insisted that your dress was too long, and you proceeded to chew off the bottom third.
Oh, you've got to show a little leg, Wendell.
And rib, and flank. Now, I still don't understand the statement that a meat dress is supposed to make.
It's high fashion.
Mm, you are high, all right.
Oh, ha, ha, ha. So I trimmed the fat off of my outfit, and then?
And then you downed a bottle of apple bourbon, spilling it all over yourself.
Delicious.
Oh, you fell onto that red carpet, laid out for all to see like an old lady buffet.
Strictly gourmet.
And then you flopped your way down the carpet like a sick fish, all the photogs snapping away.
No press is bad press.
Not even if the headline reads, Has-Been Goes Gaga at Awards?
Has-Been? Why would they give a Has-Been an award?
It was a Lifetime Achievement Award.
Well, that's even better.
At the Razzies.
The whaties?
The Razzies, where they celebrate disasters.
Oh, I may have had a few misses, but by and large, it has been an illustrious career.
Sure. Surf Grannies Go Nuts.
A classic.
Underneath the Valley of the Dolls.
Masterpiece.
Gone with the Wind Part 2. Back with the Breeze.
As God is my witness.
Oh, no.
As God is
Martha,
my witness,
really
they're
gonna
not
continue
going
this.
To lick me again. I'm going to live through this again.
Oh, so am
you
I.
You couldn't keep me down when my sixth husband died. Or my seventh. Even when Little Red Jr. tried to jump that horse and he died, I held my head up when Rhett came back and started another civil war.
There was only one civil war, Martha.
So far.
Why on earth would they set the film in the distant future anyway?
Not on Earth. On Terra 5 in the Horse Nebula.
Unbelievable.
Suspension of disbelief.
Suspension of SAG card.
Oh, it was just a probation.
For maiming Pia Zadora.
She was stepping on my lines.
So you cut her brakes?
She had to be stopped.
Oh, she couldn't stop, actually.
That's right. She went right into the fountain.
Speaking of fountains, you took a little detour on your red carpet trip and jumped into one tonight.
Oh, perfect, like Esther Williams.
More like Susan Backlinney.
No, I would have kicked Jaws right in the behind.
Oh, just like you did Tommy Wiseau when you flopped out of the fountain.
Hilarious.
And then, inexplicably, you played a game of catch with this football.
Perfectly splicably. The football represents the anxiety of the unknown.
Well, for culture's sake, but for a few chubby cinephiles, thankfully, you're both unknowns.
Oh, sure. That's why I have a star on the Walk of Fame.
No, you have a star on the Walk of Fame because you spray-painted it there, over top of Audrey Hepburn.
That fat cow!
Speaking of cows, you and your meat dress, well, you wouldn't even wait for your award. No, you just shoved Polly Shore off the podium and insisted on hosting the program.
Oh, I am a genius.
You read through the entire winner's list straight away and jumped right to your award.
Legendary.
It's not customary to read your own tribute introduction, Mark.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is my honor to introduce myself.
Cue tacky pyrotechnics, and then you slithered off for a re-entrance, rocketing up from a pneumatic trapdoor, sparks flying
like
everywhere.
Like a shooting star!
Oh, I'll say a shooting star. Your dress caught fire and cooked up to a perfect medium rare. Lured Kevin James out of the wings.
I'm irresistible.
And the whole theater looked on, jaws agape, as Paul Blart Mall Cop feasted on your smoked apple bourbon dress.
Hysterical.
Just when you thought it was safe to go back into the water, you clawed your way back to that podium. Just a few strategic stakes still in place.
Choice cuts.
And a single off-putting strip of bacon in the back.
Sizzling.
And there, in your finest hour, Pia Zadora at last exacted her revenge.
That elf! I will kill her!
From high up in the rafters, just as you were about to hoist your trophy, a bucket of sticky stage blood.
That rat! She carried me!
Yeah, and they had to carry you off, too. Out cold, covered in red, a bucket on your head.
Oh, I may be the one covered in sticky syrup now, but my revenge is going to be twice as sweet.
Oh, come now, Mother. Must you carry it on? Can't you just call it even and finally enjoy your retirement?
Who's retiring?
You haven't worked in 20 years.
Maintaining a legacy is a full-time job.
All right, but Couldn't you just hold charity functions or something?
Wendell, I don't hold charity functions. I crash them.
Yes, and I clean up the mess.
Exactly. You keep it together and I...
Keep things interesting, yes. I suppose that's true. It would be pretty boring without you.
So does that mean I can go put bees in a closet now?
What about something a little less deadly? How about a nice swimming pool full of mud?
Deal. But I get to sell the footage to TMZ.
Okay, but the proceeds go to charity.
Sold. Let's go.
No. Please, in the morning, dear. It's getting very late.
Oh, but I'm all worked up, Wendell. There's no way I can sleep now.
Oh, sure you can, Martha. You just close your eyes and I sing you a song.
A montage number while I train?
No, dear. A lullaby. As the credits roll.
Martha, the sun has bowed its head. Our friends have all gone home to bed. We've burned the candle end to end. Remember what I've said. Time and time again, every evening ends, but you don't need to fret. I'll hold you through the night. Deep sigh, my love, sleep tight. All your fears run out to sea, gently streaming as you dream, right here by me. Martha, the moon is on its way. On pinhole skies, the palm trees sway. Tomorrow is another day. Remember what I say, though a day will fade. Another one is made, never be afraid. I'll be by your side, sleep tight, my love. Good night.
Good night.